Hi there, it's Nick here. Thanks so much for listening. Not long now until the beginning of the American Triple Crown. The 150th Run for the Roses is just round the corner. As such, this is the sort of time of year where if you are not in the United States, you will be taking a keener interest in matters stateside, as we will be. As such, I would point you towards the racing app. Truly excellent for American cards, form, and one click through to free video pass performances. You don't need bookmaker signups or anything like that. You can just go to the racing app and access all that American racing and video PPs completely free of charge. Now's your time to do it. The racing app.
You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Good morning, welcome to the show. Monday, April the 22nd. Nice bright morning here in TW11. Recording this before heading off to the Racing Media Academy to talk to the class of 2024. Very much looking forward to that, as I am to heading to Hong Kong tomorrow. It's FWD Champions Day on Sunday. Be on duty there, and then head via Geneva to America for the 150th Run for the Roses to join my NBC colleagues. So lots to get through over the next couple of weeks. Lots to tee up today, including the Derby, including Hong Kong, including another Group 1 winner for the Sire, Too Darn Hot, this time in Australia. Talking to Simon Marsh about that later on. The flat season domestically is getting cranked into gear, albeit slowly, so we'll talk classic trials. Also, what's happening at Sandown this weekend on the level. Talk to Sir Michael Stout's assistant, James Savage, about the return of Nostrum. But I suspect Jane Mangan, for all she is a pedigree geek, for all she will be obsessed with flat racing by the time the classics come round, still has her mind focused on jumping because of what all Willie Mullins has been doing, both at Ayr on Saturday when he closed his grip on the British Trainers Championship, and what he's likely to do over the next few days. Could even include running Gaelic Warrior at Sandown Park, where he will likely meet John Bonn, if he does, Nicky Henderson along later too. Jane, flat or jumps at the moment?
My head is still very much National Hunt until Punchestown concludes, the championships end. And while I know we've had some meaningful trials, I have a funny feeling my brain won't really kick into gear until that last Saturday of Punchestown, when I think the Kentucky Derby's on, the first day of the Guineas meeting in Newmarket, and all of a sudden it'll be the summer.
Well, indeed. But obviously we're trying to take stock of everything on this podcast. To what extent has your interest in the remainder of this National Hunt season been enlivened by Willie Mullins and what he is doing at the moment? Just as I speak, I see him before my very eyes declaring a slew of horses for Perth on Wednesday, horses at Ludlow on Wednesday, including a 140 horse, Daddy Longlegs, in a novice hurdle, which seems to have frightened off just about everybody else bar Sheila Lewis. There comes a point, doesn't there, in any of these title chases, races, where people love it until they don't.
Yeah, that's fair. But it did draw an awful lot of attention and focus on Ayr on Saturday, the day I would usually be focused on the Fred Darling and the Greenham. I was glued to the Mayor's Handicap hurdle. I was glued to the Scottish Champion hurdle, which is a handicap, and of course, the Scottish Grand National. So there was an awful lot of focus from the Irish, who wouldn't typically be as engrossed in that meeting. And he had four winners. There was a couple of real heartwarming stories aside from Mullins. Tommy's Oscar was a great win in the opener. Sharjah rolling back the years over 3 miles over fences. Who would have thought that when he was winning four masts and hurdles at Leopardstown? And while Paul Townend didn't get close in the Scottish National, Patrick Mullins didn't even get over the first. One of them, We'll Have One, didn't get over the first. But power of numbers, McDermott and his nephew Danny, I'm sure, will have taken a lot of satisfaction in helping his uncle put one hand on the trophy.
Well, in all the Mullins hullabaloo, it would be easy enough to lose sight of the fact that a small trainer very, very nearly pulled off his biggest career success. A nose separated Toby Laws from victory in the Coral Scottish Grand National, and Surrey Quest would also have given his big syndicate ownership a red letter day. Still, I reckon they probably enjoyed it pretty well. Clive Haddingham from Surrey Racing's with me now. Clive, oh, so close, and part of a story which has virtually eclipsed you as well. So here's your chance to tell me how much you enjoyed or endured Saturday.
Mixed emotions, Nick. We thought we'd run well. We don't enter any race really without thinking we're going to be competitive, but I don't think we would have expected to be so close. You know, we're thinking top seven, but from where we were situated in the stand, we honestly thought we'd won it, and there was a few tears of joy around me, and then the agonising wait for the judge. I guess Coventry fans will be feeling quite similar yesterday with the offside decision.
With the VAR, yeah.
With the VAR, and unfortunately it wasn't called a dead heat. And congratulations to Pat Flanagan and the Mullins team. So close, but the difference between winning and coming second is huge in racing. You know, all the air dignitaries were surrounding the Mullins group, the TV, the cameras, the photographers, the press association, and we were just left to wonder what if. But, you know, we'll be back and we'll give it a crack in probably a bigger race next year. And as you can tell, my voice is just slightly returning.
I'm feeling slightly heartbroken for you. I must confess, just because of what might have been, and it's so hard to win these races. Can you barrel forward though now with optimism that you haven't done too much harm to your mark, and he can improve beyond it and win you a big prize?
Yeah, I mean, first thing first. I mean, it would have been huge for Toby Laws. It'd be huge for Kevin Brogan, who's had a few injury issues over the years, the last couple of years. You know, he's a super lad, top jockey. You know, it would have been huge for everyone just to notch that win. But yes, going forward, like we know we've got a good horse now. We are entered into a Bet365 at the weekend, but we're not going to confirm today. I think Surrey Quest is going to have a nice break over the summer. And then we look forward to next year. And I think we'll probably think about the Beecher Chase Aintree in December. And if that goes well, then, you know, maybe we'll be returning to Liverpool and taking on the biggest handicap, which I'm sure we'd probably meet some of those that finished in the top six Saturday. And bear in mind, actually, four of the top six, including us, all novices. So there should be more to come from us.
Clive Haddingham there from Surrey Racing. Jane Mangan, before we go back to the Mullins wagon, let's just concentrate on this. If you go down by a nose in a race like that and you're, you know, relatively small connections with not that big a force in the sport, to be feel completely isolated after the race must be pretty deflating. I'm surprised they didn't get a bit more attention.
Yeah, I suppose it was a typical case of who remembers the second. And I actually initially couldn't recall what horse was second. I couldn't see his colours at the far side because he was being masked by McDermott. And he was completely overshadowed, I suppose, by the occasion. And for connections, it would have been a landmark victory for everyone involved, trainer, owner and rider. So my heart did go out to Surrey Quest, but, you know, Toby Laws, Kevin Brogan, the only solace and comfort you can take is you have many comrades who have felt the same way for a very long time, but particularly this season.
All right, Jane, where does this leave us with Willie Mullins?
Yeah, so a lot of our listeners would probably be thinking, okay, can you just break down the numbers? We have a week to go. What are the official standings? Well, Willie Mullins has $3,082,000 in earnings. That leaves him $180,000 ahead of Dan Skelton, who himself is $80,000 ahead of Paul Nicholls. But Willie Mullins isn't resting on laurels. He had four winners on Saturday, but he sends a single sole runner to Foss last today, and that is Rathgall Boy in the opener, who's currently around 1-4 favourite for a race worth £4,300. So every bit of sterling counts. But just to quantify Willie Mullins' season so far, with around 10 days to go to Punchestown, he has won 30 individual Grade 1 races this year, starting with Scaramanga in the US way back in the autumn. He's also won, obviously, the Aintree Grand National and now the Scottish Grand National. But who knows where he could end up, because he has 30 in the bag, but 12 of them are yet to come at Punchestown. I'm not including Clarence House at Sandown. 12 at Punchestown, of which, Nick, for the last 2 years, of those 12 grade ones at Punchestown, he's won 9 each of the last 2 years. So, the bandwagon keeps rolling. Closer to home, here in Ireland, the focus is very much on Paul Townend and Jack Kennedy, both of whom have two rides at Tramore this afternoon or this evening. It's an evening meeting in Tramore. Jack currently leads Paul by 5 winners, 119 to 114. And you're noticing Paul Townend, a guy who doesn't usually take too many outside rides, has a couple of obscure bookings over the next couple of days in his effort to claw back Jack. But if you look at Punchestown historically for the last couple of years, Jack is going to have a near double-digit lead if he stands any real chance of repelling the reigning champion.
Well, probably the ride of the day Saturday did come from Paul Townend, and it was on Sharjah, who's been placed a number of times in the champion hurdle. A 3-mile chaser, probably not really him, but at an advanced age, almost put a tear in the eye the way that he came through to win and help Mullins' title bid. I've been speaking to Joe Chambers, as I often do on this podcast. He's racing manager to Susanna and Rich Ritchie. He's got some serious interest potentially in what happens at Sandown on Saturday. But I began by talking about Sharjah and where that ranked amongst all the great triumphs in the pink and green over the last couple of years.
Oh, way up there. He's a horse we acquired during the, I think, 2017 or 16, when Sean T had that virus that was fairly widespread and well known at the time. And he's been a hell of a friend for the last 7 or 8 years. And I know everyone got a massive kick out of it. He's been pretty reliable, other than Leopardstown, at the end of January, beginning of February every year, and always runs his race and has given everyone a huge amount of brilliant days. And we seem to be getting fairly handy with these novice chasers at the age of 11. After Fahin and now Sharjah. But I thought Paul was brilliant on him. But you know, Casey rang me last week and said he could just see him fluting around out the back and then kind of get delivered to from home, and it was kind of almost as he drew it up, to be perfectly honest with you. But out of a Royal Academy mare, 3 miles was never in doubt.
Well, exactly, it was an amazing performance, really. And he's not an absolutely natural jumper of a fence either. But anyway, he won, and more money for Willie Mullins. And as he said, now one hand on the Trainers' Championship. How much do owners enjoy being a part of this sort of circus, do you think?
Well, I know we enjoy it. Unfortunately, due to other reasons, we couldn't make air, although we did our best to. But, it wasn't that long ago that we threw everything at it. I think we'd Townsend won at Perth, and we'd a runner somewhere else when Willie got close the year that Vautour got chinned in the King George and fell in the Melian Chase, and that was probably the difference as well when it comes to prize money. So you need to bounce the ball to go your way. But you know, we told Willie at Aintree to throw whatever he wanted at it, and it looks like we'll have a couple of runners at Perth this week, and there's an element of a novelty factor and a little bit of humour around it as well. The sheer volume of entries that he's got at the moment in at Sandown is kind of borderline hilarious. But we're certainly getting a kick out of it, and within reason, I think we're very, very happy to row in behind him. And I know it's important to Willie. And I think it would be a great reflection on him and his team if he was able to pull it off.
Now, let's get clear here. Gaelic Warrior is one of those entries. Now, if he rocks up at Sandown, he's almost a sort of horse that could put a couple more on the gate, and he's in the same race as El Fabiolo. So, standing on the sidelines, it would seem unlikely that he ran in both, but anything's possible. What do you know about whether your horse is going to run there or maybe at Punchestown?
We're crawling forward day by day, and we fully expected him to be entered, and we'll kind of see which way things are looking on Thursday morning. He's in great form, etc., and all of that. I can't speak for El Fabiolo. We're not in the champion chase at Punchestown. We're only in the novice race, and it's a 30 grand supplement later this week, which doesn't really make massive appeal. Willie has always kept novices to novices, unless there's been the odd exception. But I would have thought winning the Scottish National might make him run less rather than more, but I could be absolutely wrong. I haven't got a clue what they're thinking. And, you know, he'd be a fair sight, I think. I'd love to see him personally around for 2 miles. I'd go right-handed and down the back straight. You know, I live locally as well, so I would have a fair prior and preference. But whether he goes there or not, it's going to be very much later in the week. And we do have a little bit of history at this meeting in some late withdrawals, shall we say.
This meeting 2016, Willie Mullins was going for the championship. He narrowly missed out when it was beyond reach. You had Vroom Vroom Mag walking around the pre-parade ring for about half an hour and pulled her out. That, we could wrap over the knuckles for that?
There was, but I'd also say it was one of his finer moments. It was wonderful entertainment watching himself and Rich dealing with Stewarts in the weigh-in room, or outside the weigh-in room as it was. And, you know, in fairness to him, he kind of got it right, because she went and won the champion hurdle at Punchestown 5 days later. Mm. So, you know, I think that goes back to my point about, you know, everyone's very happy to, at least we are from an ownership point of view, very happy to support him within reason in this, but he's also quite practical in that. Punchestown is around the corner also, so there's a balance to strike.
Right, well, in amongst all of this, Jane, there is actually the possibility that we're going to get some seriously good races that we weren't anticipating. I mean, El Fabiolo looks as though he's going to come to Sandown on Saturday. It's not completely impossible that he'll be joined by Gaelic Warrior.
No, not by the sounds of that. That would be fascinating, wouldn't it? It's not like the Arkle isn't working out very well. Elite Tom, found a 50. How good could he be going back right-handed?
Well, he'd start favourite, wouldn't he?
What would be his nearest rival? What would be his biggest rival?
Well, if they both ran, I believe Gaelic Warrior would still start favourite over El Fabiolo if they both ran.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
I think I would have no problem saying, I think Paul Townend is a big factor for Gaelic Warrior, because he's a very difficult ride. So it would depend for me who would be on board.
Well, is he a very difficult ride when he gets his conditions? If the ground's nice and he's going right-handed and he can just be allowed to bowl and use his jumping, which of course you can beautifully at Sandown, I think he could be absolutely insane around there.
Yeah, he's not simple. He decides on the day himself. I thought Paul Townend was particularly awesome on him in the Arkle, so let's see.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you were Paul Townend and you had the choice of rides, it's probably not going to happen, is it? But stick the hypothesis out there. If you were Townend, you had the choice of rides, they both ran in the same race, who would you ride?
I'd ride the Sounder Jumper. I think El Fabiolo over 2 miles might be the superior horse, if I'm honest.
All right, Jane, we could debate the likely fantasy race on Saturday as much as we want. What we want to know is the reality as to whether John Bonn is going to run at Sandown, or whether, looking at that, Nicky Henderson's decided to head to Punchestown instead. He is actually calling me at the moment. Nicky, you're on the podcast with us this morning. We are just wondering whether you are going to go to Sandown this weekend, or, having looked at the entries, whether you're going to have a crack at Punchestown with John Bonn. What's the thinking?
Well, we are thinking that we'll go to Sandown, yeah. That is the plan at the moment. I'm a little bit concerned, I was just reading the paper this morning, that he's had to start watering quite early, and it is incredibly dry all of a sudden. Mm.
But I guess for John Bonn, nice, good ground brings about the best in him.
As long as it's safe, yeah.
And it's funny, because this time last year he won at Aintree, and then he really thrived going into Sandown. Has that been the case again? Is he a horse that really starts to do well at this time of year?
I mean, we are aware that we did do the two last year, so it pricked our ears to it again. And the reason, I mean, Punchestown is an option, but I'd rather not be travelling. As you know, he's a sort of horse that might be, you know, when he gets the race and everything, it gets at him, and it would be safer to stay in England, to be honest with you.
Okay. I know Jane's keen to know how many you're going to put on the boat to Punchestown next week.
I'm just starting to have a look at it. We'll have Cheerskin is sort of very intended. And there's quite a few others that are possibly going to join the party for various reasons. There's a couple of novice hurdles, maybe even a bump horse. But John Bonn, at the moment, would be looking at Sandown.
I think whatever happens, Jane, whether it's El Fabiolo or Gaelic Warrior or the slim possibility of both, Sandown is actually the brave man's route.
Yeah, that's... I thought they might be tempted by Punchestown. Obviously not. They don't want to be travelling. So we could have a very, very good race to cap off the British jumping season.
We could. Shall we leave the jumping there?
Yeah.
I'll ask you what you thought of the trials, such as they were. Now, we've spoken since the Nell Gwynn, when Pretty Crystal beat Dance Sequence. We saw Hartem sort of tip his hat directly to City of Troy and indirectly to Rosalie and his stable companion in the Craven. Then we had trials at Newbury over the weekend. We had some nice racing at the Curragh yesterday. We had a couple of maidens who really knocked the eye out. A two-year-old of Richard Hannon's Hawaiian, and then a smart-looking horse of Godolphin's, I thought, at Newbury on Saturday, who's got a proper pedigree. Horse called Hidden Law, not in the Derby yet. So all sorts of everything to take out of the weekend. What really captured your imagination, Jane?
Fred Darling was the one that I thought was tactically fascinating, and the way it developed, I thought we could be looking at a couple of very smart fillies. Regal Jubilee was always prominent and had this, you know, she has a big reputation. She's the Guineas and Oaks entries, and she's very well bred. And she got caught by Fulgaria, who came from last to first under Holly Doyle for the Botty team, which was obviously a poignant win for them on Saturday. But I thought El Malka for Roger Varian was perhaps a little bit unlucky. James Doyle switching from the inside to the outside late and gaining a lot of ground. The day started on a great note for Hamish. You know, he's now an elder statesman. He's a veteran of these staying races, and he put up a heartwarming display in the John Porter. I was left a little bit wanting by the Greenham, if I'm honest. I didn't come away from watching Esquire and El Bowden and Zoom Zoom thinking, okay, that's the winner of the Guineas. If they are to do that, they're going to have to improve. And you mentioned some of the maidens. I was at the Curragh yesterday. I wasn't there to see White Birch, last year's Epsom Derby third, get back to winning ways on his seasonal reappearance. He did that last year when he won the Derby trial at Leopardstown. He was good enough on probably tough ground in the alleged, but I was actually more impressed by what I saw from Yosemite Valley yesterday in the Gladness Stakes. He's a brother to Piz Badil, and everybody was kind of comparing him to his brother, but he's actually nothing like him. He's by Sharmadal, and he's a much speedier type. And he put Jumbly away quite well, a mare who's quite highly rated in the Gladness Stakes. So that was impressive from him. And aside from those, there was 2 two-year-old races. There was a lot of money for Whistle Jacket, the full brother to Little Big Bear, a obvious reputation. He raced very professionally, but he got beaten fair and square by a horse called Coward of the County, a Cody Bear of Joseph O'Brien's. I was very taken by him. Joseph also took the opener with Midnight Strike. But I thought Coward of the County was one that I'd definitely be putting into the Royal Ascot Juvenile Notebook.
Right, turning our attentions to what happened in Australia over the weekend, and the feature race at Randwick was the Group 1 Merton Chandon Champagne Stakes, and it was won by Broadsiding. Not that much unusual in knowing that Broadsiding was owned by Godolphin, not that much unusual in knowing that the horse was trained by James Cummings and ridden by James McDonald. Quite a notable double, however, for the stallion Too Darn Hot, because he has joined a very rare band of stallions who've managed to sire a Group 1 two-year-old winner in both hemispheres in their first crop. Simon Marsh, of course, you will know from Watership Down Stud, has been responsible for marshalling the racing and stud career of Too Darn Hot. I'd imagine, Simon, that's almost beyond your wildest dreams, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, he seems to be at the moment going from strength to strength. And, I mean, for his to have a two-year-old Group 1 winner in your first crop, both in Europe and in Australia, is, as you say, beyond our wildest dreams.
And when you shuttle stallions, there is no guarantee that the mares they will meet in the shuttling country will map onto the stallion as well as the mares in their home country. What reports are you getting from the Southern Hemisphere as to what sort of stock he's getting on the ground there?
Well, interestingly, in Australia, they have... there's a lot of speed. You know, they're very, very keen on speed in Australia. And the pedigree of Tudon Hot actually has a lot of staying blood in it, in Doremi and Durara and all the half brothers and sisters. They were all very much mile and a quarter, mile and a half horses. And Tudon Hot came out and basically was a 7 furlong horse. I mean, he could get a mile, but he couldn't get a yard beyond a mile, which was totally out of sync with the pedigree. But these fast mares in Australia seem to really, really be matching with him extremely well. And interestingly, broadsiding won his Group 1 over a mile. And I'm sure next year will stay at least a mile and a quarter, if not a little further. But we, the Lloyd Webbers, we bought a filly down there called Tudon Lizzie, and she broke her maiden over 5 furlongs and was Croup 2 placed over 6 furlongs. And he has had a number of winners down there over 5 furlongs, which he hasn't really up here, but it seems to be something in that blood down in Australia where they're breeding speed to him.
Yeah, and it isn't that also a function of class. He's got a very, very classy pedigree, and that will overcome sort of obvious distance requirements, won't it?
Yeah, but he was very quick himself. I mean, John and Frankie were convinced that he could have, if we'd run him, he could have probably won a July Cup. You know, Dubawi himself, he's been able to get a full spectrum. He's been able to get sprinters and he's been able to get cup horses. And I think the same will happen with this horse. I think he'll be able to get the speed horses. But I think you'll find that with his 3-year-old crop now, he'll have plenty of horses that are staying a mile and a quarter or a mile and a half.
And is he very popular in Australia? Did he immediately capture the imagination of breeders there?
Yeah, I mean, he's been very popular both in the UK and in Australia. And in Europe, he's covered 160 mares in each of his first 4 crops. And he's got a full book again, obviously, this year. And in Australia, we restricted him to 130 mares. And he's been full every year down there with 130 mares. So it's pretty rare that a stallion will go through from year one to now actually having a completely full book of mares. But he's been very, very popular with breeders.
And restriction to 130, people will still say, well, look, 130 is a lot of mares. But if you are doing both, presumably you need to have a measure of responsibility as to how much you put these stallions to work, because you want them to last.
100%. And therefore, we've restricted him both in Europe and in Australia, and we've tried to keep it that he's not being abused or completely overworked. And he's restricted in Australia. He never covers more than 3 mares a day. And the same is happening in the UK as well.
And of course, he could have a classic winner with Fallen Angel. When you look at the 1,000 guineas, how do you assess her chances? Carl Burke was very positive when he spoke to this podcast on Friday.
Well, I think that I was at Newmarket when Carl worked her the other day, and she did a really nice piece of work. And yeah, on the form book, she's a worthy favourite, and there's no reason why she shouldn't go and hopefully win the guineas. But obviously, racing's a funny thing, and you never know what can happen on the day.
Simon Marsh there, and our Australian racing coverage is sponsored by Oz Horse, the power of passion invest, where rating matters. And I just wanted to ask you, Jane, pick up on a point that Simon made there about Fallen Angel, the 1,000 guineas fancy for Carl Burke. I know people always say, if this horse was trained by so-and-so, she'd be half the price. But if she was a Ballydoyle filly, she'd be about a quarter of the price, wouldn't she? And shouldn't she just be a very clear favourite for the guineas?
I think so, yeah. And it's not like Carl hasn't been effusive in his praise of her. He hasn't been hiding her anywhere. He's been very public about his affection for her. She's extremely well-bred out of Agnes Stewart. And she's done nothing wrong all the way through. So yeah, I'd be inclined to agree. I think when we get to Guineas Day, I think she will contract in price. I know Aidan's record in the race is outstanding, but Ylang, while she's an extremely good filly and she earned me a dinner that you still owe me from last year.
It's true, yeah.
I think she's more of an Oaks type. So yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. It's getting close now, and they couldn't be any more positive about her.
Are you a fan of Grease, the movie?
Never seen it.
Really?
John Travolta, yeah?
You've never seen Grease?
Not a fan of musicals.
But it's kind of, it's iconic. Anyway, Alone in the Drive-In. For you. All right, serious face. While we're on the subject of Carl Burke, trainer of Fallen Angel, he and Christopher Hurst all teamed up with Miss Lame at Thirsk this weekend. 3.25 lengths winner. That was the second £25,000 Tattersall's October Book One bonus winner this weekend. She was bought by John Kilbride of Kilbride Equine for 115,000 guineas from Ballyphillip Stud. Well, some of the better older horses starting to come out now on the flat as well. It's the Bet 365 mile at Sandown Park on Friday. Lord North, back from his exploits in Dubai, heads the market. Sharon, who was an impressive winner at Doncaster, is in there. Unexposed Poker Face, Flight Plan, Check and Challenge. And right in the thick of it all, Nostrum, who looks so exciting as a two-year-old. Really blistering seasonal debut last year. Little bit less exciting at Goodwood and then disappointing at York on his final start, but he's very low mileage and he's trained by Sir Michael Stout. So there is plenty of hope. Sir Michael's assistant, right-hand man, is James Savage, joins me now. James, what news of Nostrum? Is he ready to show us what he's capable of again?
Yeah, he's in good form. He's trained well throughout the spring so far. We're happy with him. His work's been usual for him. He's not a flashy horse in the morning. Just goes through the motions a bit, but that's fine. Like I say, he was brilliant at Newmarket. Nothing came to light after York, to be honest with you. So the boss just went down the patient route and called it a day for the season and starting again now.
And when you look at what he did to Imbesto, and Imbesto came out and ran two very solid races after that, he absolutely demolished him in the Sir Henry Cecil Stakes on the July course. I mean, that marked him out as a horse of really high calibre, quite a flamboyant sort of horse as well. Does he show you that sort of explosiveness, that flamboyance at home?
No, he doesn't, but he never has, Nick. He's always just been a horse that goes to the front and that, you know, that's enough. He's never been really flashy in the mornings. He's quite a laid-back fella, to be honest with you. Like I said, nothing came to light after York, so it was very disappointing. It wasn't as if you could say he didn't stay because he was beaten too far out, you know? Mm.
Ryan Moore knows the horse very well and is booked to ride him on Friday. Has he always given you the indication that he thinks he's a proper horse or just a horse?
No, he was very complimentary after Newmarket. He said, you know, this is a good horse. But visually, that was evident as well, wasn't it? I think it was there to see, and he certainly felt it, that he was, like you said, explosive, and the forms worked out well. No, he was very positive after Newmarket, and after York, let's say we were just scratching our heads a bit.
Mm. He's in the lockinge as well. I mean, that would be an obvious target if all went well on Friday. Is that the way you're all thinking?
If all went well, yeah. There's a decent gap between the two races this year. I think it's 3 weeks and a day, so that, you know, that would be perfectly acceptable if he was to impress us on Friday.
You're missing some old favourites in the yard for sure this season, but there's plenty of talent there still. I note that Infinite Cosmos is still in training and has a Middleton Stakes entry. Is that one that she's likely to take up, do you think?
She could do, Nick. We'll see how she trains in the next week or so, but she could start in the Dahlia Stakes at Newmarket. That's a race we like to start them older mares in. We have done both with horses in the past. But the Middleton will just give us a bit more time if we don't think she's absolutely spot on for Newmarket.
Yeah, and she's a filly. I remember this time last year you came on my show and you were saying, don't forget to ask me about Infinite Cosmos. You obviously think there's quite a bit of ability there. Is she clear of the little hold-ups that have been bumps in the road so far?
Yeah, that's what they are, just bumps in the road a bit. And she got struck into at Yarmouth. We were using that as a prep race, hopefully, for the mayor's race at Ascot, but she got caught. Not sure what part of the race, but she just had to have a good bit of time off after that. So that sort of put end to the season. She's done physically well throughout the winter. Like I say, she's a filly we've always liked. And we just hope now that patience again will pay dividends.
I did just look up to see if Sir Michael had any Derby entries. There is just one at the moment, but he hasn't run yet. So I don't really know whether to ask about Mission to Mars or not. What's his agenda?
He just had a bit of a setback, so he won't be he won't be in the derby. We'll be patient with him and get him going, and you'll see him sort of June time, July. He's a lovely horse. He was a bit of a talking horse in the spring. I see a couple of newspapers had him flagged up. I don't exactly know why, but he's a horse we do like a lot. And showed us enough last year to show that he is a nice horse.
Okay. And of that little crop of horses, of those 3-year-olds, is there something coming through that you think can shine sooner rather than later?
Well, we haven't pressed any buttons really yet. So we'll be sort of just turning it up a bit in the next couple of weeks. There's some lovely horses around, Nick, but I wouldn't be able to pick one out just, you know, to flag up straight away.
Well,
we'll see what the next couple of weeks brings.
We've picked out Nostrum. He goes to Sandown Friday. James, best of luck. Everyone always love to see a stouty winner.
Thanks, Nick. All the best.
Right, to whet your appetite for what's coming, which is plenty of coverage of the Kentucky Derby 150th run for the Roses over the next 10 to 12 days or so on the podcast. I'm going to welcome in Glenn Toner, who is a brilliant American racing tipster and has been a devoted follower of the sport in the United States for a long time. Now, certainly going back to and beyond my initial days presenting American racing back in the early noughties. Glenn, you've got a great enthusiasm for it. You will always be ahead of the game when it comes to looking at Triple Crown horses, Kentucky Derby horses. So tell me how you're looking at this year's race, whether it is Sierra Leone's to lose or whether there's something a little more inventive that we can get our teeth stuck into.
To be honest with you, Nick, I was with Sierra Leone very early, well, towards the end of last season after I ran in the Remsen at Aqueduct. I think he threw the race away that day. I think he was just run a bit green and obviously ducked in against when Donock come back up and got him. But I think since then, the Chad's put blinkers on him. He seems to be a lot more straightforward horse. He didn't get as detached recently in the Bluegrass as much as he did in the Remsen and previously down at Fairgrounds. And to be honest with you, I do think it is his to lose. I mean, I'd have an utmost respect for the Japanese horse, Forever Young. I can't see Fierceness putting in two performances the same. And I think Fierceness will have a lot of trouble getting on to the lead as well and be trouble throughout. Of the ones at bigger prices, I wouldn't put anyone off Anna Marie, who was run well the last couple of times at Fairgrounds, was just behind Catch and Freedom last time. But really, all roads sort of lead to Sierra Leone. He's a wonderful-looking horse, fantastically bred, and he's got the right connections as well.
And do you think he'll be a bit more forwardly placed? As he races, he seems to be getting a little bit more streetwise. As you mentioned, they put the blinkers on before the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds, and then he looked more the finished article in the Bluegrass. Chad Brown's had a runner-up in the race before in the shape of Good Magic. Do you expect him to be that little bit sharper?
I do think so, yes. I think so. I think there's going to be a great pace for him to chase into. I don't think he's going to be like a mind that bird and miles out the back. I think he'll probably be in the last third of the field. And as you know, Churchill Downs is a big enough track. It's a nice long straight as well. And he'll have plenty of time to make up the ground down the stretcher, I would imagine. I would still be a little bit concerned about him lugging in slightly, which he always has a tendency to do. But provided being kept straight, and I think Tyler can keep him right. I think he'll just run them down the stretch. I think he's just the most talented horse in the field.
Okay, by Gunrunner, owned by Coolmore, trained by Chad Brown, ridden by Tyler Gaffleone, good pedigree, possibility of being a real one. And to what extent do you think American racing again now needs a marquee 3-year-old who meaningfully has begun their campaign in classic trials and then wins a classic and then goes on it deep into the season?
I think it really does. I think obviously there's been a lot of trouble with the likes of Churchill Downs and Mr. Buffett, and it's probably tainted the sport a little bit, to be honest with you. It's a bit of a shame that the ban got extended, but I understand why it happened as well. So I think really just the horse racing would do with some good attention in the US, especially, just like it does in the UK, to be honest with you, but more so in the US. And I think the likes of Sierra Leone could get the people on board. I think the Preakness could be the most difficult one, but then obviously the Belmont's up at Saratoga this year, and he'll have no trouble with it. I think it's only a mile and a quarter, though, the Belmont. So he would have no trouble with the mile and a quarter and the Derby or the Belmont. If anything, the Preakness would be the biggest concern of the Triple Crown, but if as long as Chad keeps him fit, and I can't see why he wouldn't. He looked a big, strong horse. He looked wonderful on his gallop earlier on at the weekend there. I think he just arrived at Churchill Downs either this morning or yesterday morning.
Glenn, listeners will be thinking, well, you know, that's not a Kentucky accent I hear there. But you've been invested in this game for a long time in the US. Why did you get into it to the degree that you have?
I think I once saw a documentary on Mr. D. Wayne Lucas,
And then I was fortunate to have a good bet on Thunder Gulch when he won the Kentucky Derby, and it just accelerated from there, to be honest with you. But I've always been a fan of international racing, and like so Steve, when I met Steve Cawthon as a young child and things like that, so I ended up reading about Mr. Cawthon and Leadeater Shoemaker and so on and so forth, and Spectacular Beard Affirmed, various things like that, and it just grew from there, to be honest with you. And as you know, I'm a massive fan of the Breeders' Cup, as you know yourself.
Glenn Toner there with an early look at the Kentucky Derby. Our American racing coverage supported by our association with the Racing App, your very best one-stop shop for all American racing, including video past performances. Okay, time to alert you now to the 6th annual Racing Together Community Day, which takes place on Wednesday, the 8th of May. To tell us more, I'm joined by Alex Shaw. Alex, tell us how racing helps the community on this once-a-year occasion.
Yeah, hi there, Nick. So Racing Together Community Day is the racing's national day of volunteering. We've been doing it since 2019, so 5 years now. And it's a chance for racing to support the local communities. So get out there and actually help out in numerous ways. You know, big things, small things. It's not the actual activity as such that is the fact here. It's actually the racing industry getting out there and supporting their local community.
Okay, so just give us an example of as to how the workforce mobilizes itself to really be a key part of the community within which it sits.
Of course, yeah. So brilliant example, actually. Only last week we had Jed O'Keefe and the team there doing a garden transplant from a family garden to a local hospice. And obviously they were joined by a group of trainers out there. Actually, you had Spigot Lodge, Ed Bethel, Mickey Hammond, all involved. And actually their teams were moving these plants to the hospice to actually just brighten up the area, give the residents a space where they could sit and, you know, just take some time to, well, time out of their day if they need to. So really, really kind of positive impact there. They've also been involved in bake sales recently. I know Andrea particularly likes her baking the cake, so they're always really good cakes. Haven't sampled them myself yet, but they always look really, really good when she sends us over the photos.
Well,
sorry, go on.
No, go on, Alex.
I was just going to say, we've also got Arena Racing. I know they're currently, this month and last month, currently involved in food drives across all their sites across the UK. So they are looking at getting the food and sending out to food banks to support in that way as well.
Well, how can we get involved?
So this year we are taking place on May the 8th. So go to the Racing Together website, which is racingtogether.co.uk, and there's a chance to sign a page there to sign up. May the 8th, we will be at Chester Racecourse. So we will be highlighting kind of some events on the day there. But it doesn't just have to be May the 8th. It can be across the whole month of May. We want to celebrate and highlight all the great things that racing's doing for the local community. So have a look on our Facebook page, our social media, go to the website, sign up and help us out as much as you can.
Alex, thanks so much.
Brilliant. Thank you, Nick.
Okay, thanks to all my guests today. Jane Mangan is with me with a tip for you.
I'm off to Tremor for the second race. Boston Bongo was extremely unlucky to make a bad mistake at the second last at Limerick last time when he finished second for Barry Fitzgerald and Brian Hayes. I hope that Boston Bongo can go one better in the 5:10, the second race today at Tremor, a day that'll definitely be ice cream central and in summer sunshine. What a change a couple of days make.
I've just read a tweet from Nick Goff, who you'll know quite well if you are a racing Twitter user. He said, thought we found a decent handicap hurdle to finish the season for our novice hurdler slash potentially nice novice chaser next year. Race had 8 runners last year. This year, Willie Mullins has entered 9 himself. I do enjoy a good trainers championship battle, said no one ever. That is going to be the tale of a few this week, isn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of what we feel every day in Ireland, but I feel their pain.
Yeah, so also bred, I noticed, that was entered in that Ludlow maiden hurdle, I suspect, he won't be running. Jane, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. That was Monday, April the 22nd. Thanks for your company. See you again tomorrow. Bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the racing app in partnership with FitStairs.